deep left field. It is gone!
Hit well. Deep right. Bautista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 198. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll have some meatballs, talk about what the Guardians did this week while they're playing baseball, talk about playoff odds, potential matchups they could have, some scenarios coming up with the three-game series against the White Sox, what it could mean if they sweep or get swept, maybe who we want to play in the playoffs, who we want to avoid if the Guardians make it. Talk about the pitching staff, a lot of good things happening there. Shane Bieber looks like an ace. Aaron Civale is probably returning on Tuesday. Zach Plesac might be returning next week, but the big question is, should he? We'll talk about Josh Naylor, who is slumping, probably still slumping. He had a home run today on Monday, but still not great overall recently for the man who was very impressive early in the season. We'll talk about him and what maybe some first base DH options could be next year for the Guardians. And of course, joining me for all that and more, another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, it's been a while. How you doing?
It has been a while since I could hold my... Oh, hell yeah. Sorry.
Keep going.
Something in my head all of a sudden.
It's just going to be there. The only thing stuck in my head anymore is MLB TV ads. It's all over.
It's been a while since I've seen one of those, that's for sure. And look, I can hold my head up high. It's been a while. And it seems to disappear. That's it. Yeah, okay. I know this is stained after this, I think.
The Guardians have been doing things. I don't know if you saw, man. It was this last series against the Twins was... That was fun. It was intense, really, because they just fucking demolished. Other than that 15-inning monstrosity, that was kind of intense. But I miss having these late games that matter a lot, either not having it wrapped up right away or not being eliminated. I don't remember if last year, were they out this soon? I remember being kind of soon because I'm thinking like, oh, well, there's a week left. There's nothing. This sucks.
I think they were still technically like in, like they had a border chance,
for the longest time.
But like it was like, you know, like whatever, this sucks. Like, it wasn't anything like real. Because what did they finish last year? 80 and 82.
Yeah, it was the only losing season. Yeah, because they just reached 80 today and there's like 2 weeks left. So
yeah.
They're quite a bit ahead of schedule, which is nice.
I'm enjoying it so far. It's been fun to see them really just beat the piss out of the time.
That's the best part, really. We've demoralized that team so bad. First they have the Yankees who come in and do it, and now the Guardians are doing it and
well, remember, what was it? It was earlier in the year, like when they just. I think we've seen enough of the Cleveland Guardians.
Every time we play the Twins, it's somebody commenting, I think the Twins have had enough of the Guardians.
Just absolutely whooping their butts. It's really funny. They do this so well to the whole Central, too. It's very funny how well they are, how good they are, just beating up their closest rivals. Like they have a winning record. Oh, they don't have a winning record against the White Sox somehow, but
they do. Aren't they 9-7? I think they barely have a
win. No, they're 9-10. That was last year. I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. I was gonna say I thought they're if they're not winning, my whole math that I've done trying to figure out the playoff stuff is gonna be messed up.
9-7, yeah. 8-5 against the Royals, 10-9 against Detroit's really showing a little bit of sprightliness there.
I'll remember for a while there, just like we couldn't beat. I think we got swept by them at one point, but
that was weird.
And then we switched back.
Yeah, things got back to normal, which was nice. Yeah.
Did you know Sandy Leone was on this team this year? Speaking of things I feel like a long time ago.
You know,
they mentioned that during the game today. I was like, what?
I remember, yeah, I saw him yesterday or today or something like that when I was watching the game. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Huh, there he is.
I forgot that was this year. I saw Kevin Plawecki was just released by the Red Sox, and that was last year, right? Everything runs together now, these two.
My buddy is going to be very sad. He's a Red Sox fan. Big Sandy Leone and a Kevin Plawecki fan. Oh, yeah.
Just a rough couple years for him for catchers.
Really just dreadful.
At least the rest of his team is good, right? They're probably fine.
Yeah, I haven't checked the standings in a while, but I'm sure they're doing great. One has to assume they have all that money.
You know what else is doing great, Merritt?
What's that?
Meatball's great, Merritt. Of course, that's where we talk about things the Guardians did. In the last, I guess, technically at this point, we could do the last month if we really wanted to, but the Guardians, especially Ahmed Rosario, did something very fun over the weekend. 8 hits on Saturdays, just absolutely decimated the Twins. We were talking before the podcast, he's kind of like an inverse of Andrés Giménez, where Giménez, you never really think he's doing all that well. You look at his stats and he's like a superstar. Ahmed Rosario, it's like you look at these, his good games stand out so much, like he's had. Get 8 hits again, like I said on Sunday, and then you look at his stats and he's dead average everything. It's just a weird reverse he has. But on Saturday, he did have 8 hits. I looked, I wanted to see
over two games.
I mean, it's in the same calendar day. It counts. His last one wouldn't have been on Sunday because they played until like 12:50. Oh, it would have been because he walked off, right?
Yeah. Well,
does he that did not count?
But that wasn't a hit.
Oh, that's right. That was an error.
That was an error. So, okay. Yeah.
That would have been a conundrum. But so I wanted to look. And luckily, someone else did the work already because Christian Yelich in 2015, he had 8 hits for the Marlins. Remember when he was first of all good and second of all played for the Marlins? He had that playing against the Phillies, a 5-2 game. It was a doubleheader, obviously. He was one of 9 players who, or 9 players have 9 hits. So he was one short of the record, which also means Oliver Rosario was one short of the record. It's a bunch of just random players. Last time it actually happened was, I had it written down several years ago. Where was it? 1961 was last time somebody hit 9. So I would assume that 2015, when this article was written by Joe Frisario on MLB.com, probably that was last time somebody's done it, which was Yelich. But it's kind of neat that Oliver Rosario tied it. And speaking of the doubleheader part, so all 8 of the 9 who hit 9 hits didn't doubleheader, but one player did it in an 18-inning game in 1932. Merritt, who is it?
It's everybody knows this. Joe Sewell.
You started with a J. You were close. It's everybody's favorite Cleveland Indian, Johnny Burnett.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Old JB, I call him. Johnny Burns. He always burned it down the first baseline.
I knew him. He was great. Yeah, I've never heard of him. But he was the only one who did it not in a doubleheader. Was the rest of these guys who just clobbered the ball for so many games. And Ahmed Rosario, of course, in his game just looked, or in both games, looked absolutely dominant. It was all singles. That was kind of funny. One home run, the rest were singles. And, of course, that error that walked off the game. But
he had more hits in that day than Carlos Correa had over these 5 games.
No, I didn't think to look at that kind of stuff, but I'm sure that's... We could look at all kinds of stuff like that. God, we beat the piss out of the Twins, didn't we?
Just absolutely annihilated them, man. I don't know. I don't feel bad for Carlos Correa necessarily, but you know, at the same time, just like, how dreadful to come to this team and be like, I'm the X Factor. We spent money on pitching. We're going somewhere. No, you aren't.
No, you're not. Anyway.
No, everyone's gonna flail and die. You know, yeah.
He's on a 1-year deal at least, isn't he? I think.
Yes. So he's a free agent of the year. He's gonna get. One would assume he gets paid because he's having a great year. You know.
Oh yeah.
825 OPS, something like that. And
I would assume he's not even gonna talk to the Twins after this year.
I would imagine. I would never even. If anything, I'd go to the NL, so you have less of a chance of even going to Minnesota at all.
You still have to play him at least once next year.
That's true.
A schedule thing, but
yeah, maybe I'll just take that. Maybe they'll come to whatever city he goes to.
Yeah, he can just be sick that day. Yeah, that's my whole meatball, just Ahmed Rosario. What a calendar day for him. Not even one game. Like, the one was in 5 at-bats. The other one was in 8.
It's a great week's work. And again, to your point, you look at his numbers after this incredible – just after that game
he's
alone.
He's back to average.
Like, after that game, because that was the evening game, he finished that day with a – where is it? There it is. A 718 on OPS. He finished that day after getting 8 hits. Again, to be clear, batting 283, 314, 403. Like, the man is just exactly who and what he is. And I just, what that might be is a guy you don't resign. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I don't
Apparently, he's irreplaceable. You just can't.
The most important player on the entire team is Ahmed Rosario, not the other 5 guys in the top 5 of the batting order.
I think probably, like I said at the time a bunch of times, I was fine with not trading him because they wouldn't have missed him. I think if they traded him by now, we would all forget entirely. I don't know. I think we would have just moved on. We would have had like Tyler Freeman starting every day, and they probably still would have been fine. I don't know. But I'm still not heartbroken he's here. I'm glad he has these huge games, and I still like him as a player in person overall.
I think Tyler Freeman could hit something approaching league average if you gave him – I mean, he already got an OPS, an 86 OPS plus. Like,
and he's only been in a little bit, and his defense has been amazing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's got a couple doubles. I mean, whatever. You know, good for him. Or they could get one of the other 1,000 middle infielders and see how they are. So, you know, a bunch of Gabriel Arias, if you give him a chance, he would have been fine.
So what's your meatball, mate?
Well, as we all know, the reason that Cleveland was so dominant this weekend – it's because of defense and relief pitching, right? No. It turns out this was such a comedy of errors in relief pitching. Both sides, too. Just dreadful. Cleveland had 12 innings pitched out of the bullpen. 11 hits, 15 strikeouts. Pretty good. But they gave up 9 runs, which isn't great. That's a 6.75 ERA. And most times, that'll really lose you a 5-game series because you're just giving up late runs. It's not great. However, the Twins had to go deep, man. They had 21 innings pitched out of their bullpen, giving up 17 runs. 17 runs! That's a 7.29 ERA. They had 19 strikeouts and gave up 26 hits as well. Just just a dreadful outing by all pitching. Like, I think what this does state, though, is for as, like, not maybe maligned is too strong a word, but, like, you know, not talked about a lot is, you know, just Cleveland starting pitching in comparison to previous years, of course. They were great this whole weekend. Like, the young guys coming up, I mean, Pilkington was pretty good. Who's the other guy who got a start? Not Hunter Gaddis.
Cody Moore.
Cody Morris, he was pretty good. I mean, Quantrill gave a very typical Cal Quantrill outing on today, Monday. Bieber was dominant. McKenzie had a good outing as well. Even I think that was the loss they took. He still went. Actually, Cody Morris was a loss. It's just very impressed all in all. Like, when they start pooping out guys like Pilkington and Morris and stuff, it's like, this is going pretty well, actually. Even despite everything, like, I love to see it. McKenzie went 7 3 earned runs.
Yeah, it feels like a drought since they've had those guys. Like, I guess Pilkington and Morris were one of them, that gear two of them that came up and weren't great right away, like we've seen so many times. And of course, Hunter Gaddis is just clearly not ready to come up and pitch.
I just want him to be good. I like his vibe. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I like his changeup, but it's the same thing as like Eli Morgan. If you just have a fastball and changeup, your changeball doesn't fool anybody in the majors. Go figure.
But. Gotta get that slider. You'd think that everyone could throw a slider these days because everyone can throw a slider, but nope. Guess not.
Not them. I do like Morris so far. He's the one. He's got a, I mean, he's all fastball, cutter, and occasional changeup, but he's worked all
out. He's got to see more breaking balls. Where's the curveballs? Where's the big dirty hammers that I got so used to over the last few years? Those were fun.
Big dirty hammers.
Everyone just steal Shane Bieber's pitches. Just get them from him. Just take them. like your Mega Man.
Yeah. What's the get the basketball from Space Jam and make Shane Bieber touch it. And
there we go. But don't
not too much, just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, exactly.
Just borrow it and give back at your start. That's all.
Actually, yeah, that's true. You could just pass all the best pitches around in a ball. Yeah, and
why
then
is
there
nobody
you
doing this? We've solved it and nobody's doing it.
Idiots. Come on, you just gotta get the weird magic or possibly science ball. I'm not sure which. But anyway, yeah, just not great pitching out of the bullpen for the most part from either team. And, you know, a lot of that is like outliers, like Enyel de los Santos, one inning, two runs, and a couple other just kind of getting through the game because we're retired here. But I don't know.
Yeah, when you got a 15-inning game mixed in there, kind of
you had the
mucks things a little bit.
Or yeah, you had the 15-inning game where Stephen collapsed and Karinchak blew it and all that stuff. Even McCarty came in through the last three innings, which honestly dominant by him, by Kirk McCarty in that 15-inning game. Three innings in the back end there, giving him two hits, one earned run, like three strikeouts. Like, you can't be mad at that at all. You can only be happy. And, you know, especially because they got the win. So there you go.
That reminded me of, it wasn't nearly the stakes of like the win streak, but wasn't it like the end of that Trevor Bauer came in like an extra inning game at one point? I misremember when that was.
That's 1,000 years ago at this point. So,
that was pre Sandy Leone by like 2 years. That's so long ago.
Oh, the good days.
I feel like he did, and that reminded me of that. Or like, I want to see Kirk McCarty be the Ryan Merritt of this year and just like come in and be amazing for one random game in the playoffs and disappear forever.
I like his name because it seems like a fake name made up by a bad author.
It is Kirk McCarty. That's
definitely. Yeah, yeah. He's the lead protagonist in the knockoff version of like a. What's that art of, that author, the guy that Lee Child writes about, the big muscly guy that they made a TV show of him, Jack Reacher.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that does, yeah, Kirk McCarty does sound like a
knockoff CIA Jack Reacher. Agent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, with how good the Guardians did, they've basically set themselves up to be in the playoff. It's been in their hands for a while. They've led the division for a little bit, but now more than ever, it's really just up to them to not blow it. According to Fangraphs, 93.3% chance to make it. 1.3% chance to win the World
Series. I think it's gone down.
I just checked right before the podcast.
I just looked just now, and it says that they have an 89.
Jesus, they updated that stuff.
89.9% chance. So it went down by 0.3% somehow.
Did the Mariners?
I don't know how.
The Mariners. That's the only change is the Mariners won their game. I think
maybe because the Mariners won. Because that's true. Because Cleveland is
it lowers
the game back of the third wild card as well.
Yeah, that's probably it then. But
so yeah, that's fine though. I mean, they have basically as long as they can win one game against the White Sox coming up, they'll be pretty much fine. I to your point on Twitter or in the Slack, whatever it was, we're all worried about that 6-game stretch of the year. But
yes, that is the fear in the back of my mind. Those goddamn Royals. Because, I mean, they're the Royals, but that would be peak Royals bullshit to just come alive for six games and ruin everything.
Just sweep them? Like,
God, can you imagine the fallout of that? Like, if they do okay against the White Sox, like maybe 2-1 or even 1-2, but they still look okay. We go into the last series, it's really close, and then just decimation. That's it.
2-4 or something like that?
Yeah. Just a sweep at the hands of the Royals.
Oh, God. Six-game sweep.
I wanted to look and see, just based on what they do against the White Sox, what they have to do. What happens essentially? So, because they have three against the White Sox, three against the Rangers, three Rays, and then that wild six games against the Royals to end the year.
Yeah.
And basically, the Guardians have managed their entire pitching staff to be ready for this White Sox series. So, I mean, hopefully they're good. It's a tough matchup for them. It's Dylan Cease, Lance Lynn, Johnny Cueto against probably like Aaron Civale, Bieber, and McKenzie, I think is the order. So, as long as the Guardians win one game, they own the tiebreaker. So, if they own the, yeah, because they're 9-7 right now. So, if they win one game, they'd be 10-9 at the absolute worst, so they can tie the White Sox. If the Guardians sweep, they're basically eliminated, the White Sox. The Guardians only have to win 5 of their last 12 games, which I think they can probably manage, and that's only if the White Sox go out of their mind and win everything.
And that's the thing. The White Sox have Minnesota for 6 games over the last 9. So like they have the final 3 is against the White Sox. They have the Padres in the middle there. The Padres, I think, are still playing for a playoff position, aren't they?
I think they are, yeah.
Padres have an 87.2% chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they're in the wild card, yeah. I mean, they're only a couple games above the Brewers, so it's
so like they're still in a fight, exactly. So the Padres aren't going to be like resting people the last couple of games of the season, because you know, neither are they. But one can, I guess, hope in some way or other that the Twins will get their heads out of their ass.
It's going to be real awkward rooting for the Twins and like talking to Twins fans. Hey, you guys got this. I believe in you.
You're great. We love you. You're fantastic.
Forget what happened the last week. It's fine.
How have they only? Oh, there's a cup. Never. I was going to say, I thought they'd only played the White Sox. It doesn't make any sense. What's the record against the White Sox this year?
9-7. They're the Twins, you mean? I'm not sure.
Twins, yeah. Oh, that's why I can't see, because I'm looking currently at the White Sox record. Interesting. That would be confusing to me. Good old Twins. Anyway, to your point, though, yeah, they definitely, obviously in the driver's seat. They're, what, 4 games up now to lead the division?
And, I mean, even if the White Sox sweep, it's they'd be 80-70. The White Sox would be 79-71. So it would just, they're basically determining how tense the last set of games. Like, the White Sox can't lock anything up with this series as long as the Guardians keep winning. But still, I mean, you want to sweep them, and you want to at least win 2 and make it a little easier down the stretch and hope the White Sox fall apart a bit, and maybe the Twins remember how to play baseball against them. But
because who did you say was pitching? It's going to be Cease.
It's a nightmare.
Cueto and
Lance Lynn.
And Lance Lynn. Oh, God,
that is I don't know. That's scary.
That's a tough.
Didn't Johnny Cueto do good against the Guardians this year? I know Dylan Cease and Lance Lynn always do, because they're ridiculous, especially Lance Lynn. So it's not an easy matchup at all.
Not at all. But like at the same time, like you said, the Guardians are rolling out. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll see what we get out of Civale. I feel like he's pitched 3 innings all year, but
well, he was good when he came back from that wrist, because you remember he had a wrist injury for a while. He missed a month, came back for like 4 starts, and then the arm thing. So he was good in between there. It seemed like he was back, whatever the wrist thing was. Like maybe it was causing his early season struggles, and he fixed it. But I don't know. He was good in that little bit, and I hope he's good. That'd be one hell of a comeback to come back and beat Dylan Cease and just help the Guardians keep going.
Just sort of shut out. All right, good enough, bud. Let's do this.
Yeah, but in some way, the series is basically just like a mini playoff. Like, it's the wrong order, but you've got the top 3 pitchers. I guess you probably have Quantrill over Civale, but the White Sox have their top 3 because who's the other? Michael Kopech is out, so he's not pitching.
Giolito?
Giolito? Would he be? I guess he'd probably be over Cueto, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. You're a certified Lucas Giolito hater, so maybe
I am. Always have been, always will be, and I'll never give it up. You know what? If you're gonna be a hater, you just gotta stick to it.
You're gonna be at his Hall of Fame speech throwing rocks at him from outside the stadium.
And you know what? At least this year, I'm vindicated.
Yeah, you are kind of vindicated.
You stink. I know that. Oh, now I feel bad.
Now, assuming they do make it, and whether it's sweeping the White Sox or losing to them and just demolishing the Rangers, Rays, and Royals, I guess the question is, who would you rather face
Yankees.
In the playoffs? The Yankees. In my notes, I wrote, probably not the Yankees or Astros, right? Apparently, that's the one you want to face.
Well, you don't want to go to a long series against the Yankees or the Astros is the thing, because, you know,
you got to beat them, do it right.
The fewer chances they have to assert dominance, the better. the more chaos involved, the better. And if there's one thing the Guardians are this year, it's chaotic. So, and plus with the Yankees kind of falling to earth at least a little bit and kind of having becoming kind of a one-trick pony show sort of a thing, I would rather face it than the Astros. I think the Astros are just too deep. That's a World Series winning team right there, I think, again. Like, that's one of those teams, like, it reminds me a little bit of the, like, the 20, was it 15? The 2015 Royals. Royals just won, like, 97 games, and everyone forgot about them. Like, the Astros are 96-51. Like, they're going to win 100-some-odd games, and we just all forgot about it. Like, it's not like the Dodgers who are just, like, blowing people away, or, like, you know, I guess you could say the Braves are similar to them, because they're projected to win 100 games this year all of a sudden. So I don't know what the hell happened there.
Wasn't there an article like right before the All-Star break that was like, can the Astros catch the Yankees? And now they've blown right by them.
Blown away. Like, they're just so good. Like, Astros pitching staff is just too deep. Like, it's ridiculous that, like, Luis Garcia is great. Javier is great. Valdez is great. Verlander, of course. They're just so deep, just top to bottom. But, like, you know, I mean, I know what's his name's come to earth. I've been heard of it with Alvarez, but. They hit the shit out of the ball. They pitch the shit out of the ball. They're just a good team.
The ball everywhere. It's
cool. Yeah, I mean, they can eat butt. I think we can all agree on that. But
let's see. Can I put that as a title? In there?
They can eat butt.
Not the meat butt. There you go. The good news is they're not playing into those guys in the first round. Because the way it's set up now is... They're going to play the sixth seed, essentially. Because they're not going to drop more than three. Because they're going to win the division. Right now it's the Mariners, which I think is a nightmare scenario because I think the Mariners are good. I would almost rather play the Rays than the Mariners. I don't know why, but I guess we'll see coming up.
The Rays are like just broken, it seems like. They're just kind of they're just suffering from fall apart, unfortunately. And like that just happens, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Teams get hurt. Like I don't think they're that much better than the Guardians are, even though they have a better record.
Yeah. I definitely wouldn't hate to play them if they drop down and
The thing is, like,
it's a close between those, so it's like one game split between
I'll take the Mariners too. You know, I don't know. I just feel there's a cool energy to a Mariners Guardians game. Cleveland and Seattle, you know, hated enemies. Just long history.
Long time. East Coast versus West Coast, as they say.
North Coast.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I think the absolute best case scenario would be the Orioles play out of their mind. The Mariners collapse and play the Orioles.
I don't know, man. There's kind of weird devilry with the Orioles.
If they make it, they're just going to win. It's destiny.
What are you doing over there? Teams that are powered by a dominant catcher always make me worried because, I don't know, like they're good and also they're good. It's just like they wear orange and black. They're just going to pull an East Coast, San Francisco.
like the Giants from last year where they
vanished. The years that they won World Series by accident a couple times there. In 2010, 12, and 14. So I don't know. I think ideally, I'd take the Rays, but
yeah, that's probably my idea. There's just something about the Mariners who just seem like they're too team of destiny ish to want to mess with in the playoffs.
They got some positive jazz to them. I'll say that their pitching staff is just quite excellent. I mean, Ray, Gilbert, Gonzalez are all solid pitchers. I don't know who the hell George Kirby is. Apparently he's pitching the shit out of the ball. So there you go.
Greg Maddux. It was a rough series when I played him before, and I think it would be again. But definitely the Rays, and we'll see coming up playing them. And after that, I mean, they're going to play, there's virtually no way the Yankees are going to catch the Astros. So it would be Guardians, Yankees in round two. Yeah, because no matter what, the fifth and fourth seed would play
the
Astros. Yeah, and that'd be a little longer series. The best thing would be if they could play them in the first season, like somehow play the Yankees in the wild card, but there's no way the Orioles or the Blue Jays are going to, maybe. Actually, you know what? There's only five games. They could never know.
There you go.
There's the best case scenario. Just have the Blue Jays rock it up, steal the division, somehow play the Yankees in a short series and catch them off guard and hope you get that one Garrett Cole game where he explodes into himself. And there you go.
Well, plus we have the Josh Naylor outlier of in October, he becomes Mega Reggie Jackson.
He goes Super Saiyan and demolishes the league. I hope he does that again this year. I don't care what he does the rest of the regular season at this point, if they're in. I just want to see him go absolutely off in the postseason.
Just go mash mode. It'd be great.
Yeah. Just do it against the Mariners and then the Yankees and then Man, that is a tough road to get to the World Series. The other side does not look as scary. I don't think the Mets are that scary. The Dodgers, I guess, are terrifying. But like,
the Dodgers are the most dominant team we've seen in decades, at least in the regular season. And you know, they're just so good.
The Braves are super good too, but they're not as deep as the Dodgers.
A slippery, sneaky team too. You know, it's like they keep on pulling these guys. Who are you? Who are you, Michael Harris? Oh, I'm a 5.5 win player. Oh, all right, cool.
They're basically what the Guardians have done, but even better. Like getting all these rookies and
pulling that Spencer Strider out of their ass. Who are you? I'm not a porn star.
Ignore the mustache.
I don't know why you said that. I'm suspicious. They're finally getting superstar seasons out of guys like Dansby Swanson and Freed's pitching. Like, yeah, this team is good.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch on both sides. Even the Mets, it's fun to watch the Mets not be terrible. I think they're a fun team, just not great. I realize the Phillies are a 6th seed right now if it stayed the way it was, which is wild.
Grinding their way into the damn playoffs. I'm so proud of them. I will say the Mets would be a mess to face in the postseason. I mean,
Scherzer, DeGrom, and
then the third starter is, I don't even care, Chris Bassett or Carlos Carrasco or something, or Taiwan Walker.
Man, I would not want to play Carrasco in the World Series. That would hurt my soul too much.
Yeah, I'd be a sad boy then. Yeah. I don't want to be a sad boy.
I'd be a sad boy. I want to be happy World Series boy.
Yeah, exactly. I want to enjoy it. I don't want to be sad and see my happy boy. No.
But if the Guardians do make it to the postseason and presumably deep into it, if they're going to make it there, which by God, I want to have another. I want to be overly emotionally attached to a team again in the postseason. That's all I want. I just want to be too.
It's been a while. Team, yeah.
But if they do make it, it's going to be because of their pitching staff. I think part of the reason down the road here, especially in the playoffs, they're not going to. It's not going to be all just BABIP hits. They're going to rely on some good pitching and have some low scoring games. Their rotation is interesting right now, to say the least. Like you mentioned earlier, Shane Bieber has looked Shane Bieber again. He hasn't allowed more than one run in two starts since August 14th. He's just been like shut down. Not more than three runs since July 24th is how good he's been. His most of those three runs, but he struck out 11. That was against the Orioles. So he has like purely been back to Shane Bieber, and it's been quiet too, because it's not like he's double digit strikeouts every game now. He's still the guy who uses sliders a lot, which is different. Uses cutters a little bit. He's a different pitcher. He's not as like a big electric guy that always shows up because he's striking out 15 guys every once in a while, but he's back to being absolutely dominant Shane Bieber, which is what they need in the postseason.
Yeah, we're going to get, 30 starts out of him? I mean, health is no longer even a worry at all. Obviously, velocity specifically is still the worry because he still only throws, 92 or whatever. But
he's made it work somehow.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, he's got two incredible breaking balls. He has that cutter as well. So he just has all the tools to keep guys off balance. I mean, we'll see how that plays once they hit the postseason. His Cy Young year, they hit the postseason. He got just brutalized immediately. But I think what's really going to be interesting, obviously, with the postseason, I hate to derail this comment immediately, is obviously starting pitching is not what we think it is when you hit the postseason. I hope we can get 5 innings out of any of these guys in a postseason series, or in a postseason start, rather. But seeing what we have out of Bieber, obviously, it's nice to have a front line kind of, something resembling an ace again. Because it's less nerve. I don't know. It's nice to have that kind of guy. When the Guardians were kind of swooning there when Corey Kluber was at his peak, or 2014, what is Cy Young, right? Or 15, 14, or even 15, when they were pretty good, but the pitching staff hadn't all locked it in yet. Having that dude is just, it's a sense of relief, I guess. At least we can work our way around to him. Even if we're in a, we're in a bit of a skid, we can at least grab a win and just kind of, feel better about ourselves and bounce back the next day. But
yeah, I think stopper is the term people
stopper,
use.
Stopper, yeah.
Stop a slide by having your ace up there.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, you mentioned Kluber, and I looked at his stats. It's Shane Bieber just basically backed into being Corey Kluber.
Pretty much.
You look at their strikeout totals, they're basically the same.
Yeah. I mean, he is, he's just kind of recreating what, not peak perhaps, but late peak Corey Kluber was.
He's not even that far off the peak too, which is crazy. He's just not as good as he was himself at the peak, but he's basically pretty good Corey Kluber, right before the peak or right after.
And I think that the pandemic year really kind of skewed our view of him, quite honestly. I mean, the 2019 year was insane, but it was still his ERA was still 328. So it's just good. Obviously, it's what you want. But he was striking out a billion people. He was top like 8% or something. 259 strikeouts in 214 innings. 186 hits allowed. 31 home runs. Like, he was excellent. And then just the pandemic year happened. You're like, this is fucking wild.
But then you look at who we played, and it was the only team out of Central was the Pirates and Reds. So
yeah, exactly. So I guess it helps. It is about who you face sometimes. So
I'm not going to call it a Mickey Mouse Cy Young, but it was. I think he had an easier road that year than others. But you still got to strike people out. It's not like he wasn't making good pitches that year. Last year he was still really good, like, but he just got injured.
Like, you know, those teams aren't all bad. I know the Pirates are, but, many of these teams are not all bad, and he just was dominant, like, from the word go. And I think the year he's having there is, I would say, probably his most impressive year because of the combination of just longevity, continued growth throughout the season, if anything. Like, he's been – I'm just so, like, as soon as a pitcher ever gets hurt – I'm always like, oh, they're injury prone. This sucks. And he's like top 5 or 10 or whatever in games started. Like, he's pitching in every way like a guy like we hoped he the pitcher we'd hope he'd become when we saw him in 2018, basically. So, yeah, it's great. And then I think it's just we happen to catch him on one of those runs he's on, like he's on right now in 2020. It's just kind of happened that way. So.
This would have been the whole season. Like, if he went back to Yeah, his bet, like July 29th, if you just assume that was – like the start of that season, he would have had a 1.68 ERA. He still wasn't striking out as many, but like he's had another 2020 season against a lot better competition. Like the Mariners are in there. The Twins are a better team. I think they played Toronto. So it's not like against terrible offenses, and he's worked on, which is you're going to want in the postseason. And just, even if he just goes deep, he doesn't have to strike out 20 people in a playoff game, just get 7 or 8 innings. So, you know, you have relievers if Tristan McKenzie doesn't do well in the postseason or Darren Savali collapses or whatever. But, And that'll be the other thing, too, is just how good this bullpen is. I think we'll really see. I wish either Terry Francona would do it or Emmanuel Clase would sign off on being a fireman kind of guy like Andrew Miller was. But it seems like he is – one of them is determined to keep him in the closer role, which I guess isn't the worst thing in the world, but also I would love in the postseason to see him come in with, like, bases loaded, top of the eighth kind of thing. But
I'm not worried, but, like, I'm wondering if that's a role that they're going to fill with, like Karinchak, or who again has been dominant this year.
Yeah, like Trevor Stephan, maybe?
Or Stephan, like, maybe. Yeah, he's kind of a, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Karinchak
is
like, too wild for me to do that, I think. Like, there's too much of a chance he's going to throw a wild pitch or walk somebody. At least Stephan. Yeah,
that's true. You need someone a little more control, but also Karinchak has the insane side of things, which is important in a situation like that. If you need someone who just has, you know, balls the size of fucking globes.
Yeah.
And he has. I mean, I'm sure Stephan does too. He just, I guess he's not quieter, as demonstrative. Yeah. But that's the thing. You look at his numbers, and like he's not that much "quote unquote" worse than Karinchak, and he's pitched twice as many innings. So like, you give Karinchak another 30 innings, I'm sure his ERA is going to creep up half a run or something like that. Because like you said, he'll walk a million people. But
yeah,
even with him, like his walks are down. Like, not down big, but like he's not walking. He doesn't have a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio anymore, which is nice. So
Yeah, there are very few relievers in this bullpen, just looking at the list of who I'd be concerned about. Like, I guess Eli Morgan, if he came in that. Obviously, Brian Shaw, I don't know why he's still on the roster, but like,
Sam Hinches,
sure. Hinches I'd be fine with.
I squinted him a lot because, again, last year I was like, I don't know. I wish he was good. He's huge, but he was not good, and so he's bad.
I mean, he's one of those guys, like, you put him in the bullpen, he only has 2 pitches, but he's big and throws a fast enough ball, even if it's straight as an arrow. You only see a guy 1 at bat. That's all you need, and you can get him out with that, I think.
And it's a massive slider. They can throw for strikes, too. Like, he's very much a poor man's Andrew Miller, like, just destitute. But, you know, Sandlin, again, good numbers. I don't know what I believe out of him, but like, this was something, I don't know if we talked about on the podcast, but it was something I heard on another podcast that Ray Ratto talked about, was the whole, a great team that has championship, you know, kind of goals, has 4 guys you can count on. And now, on September 19th, I'm beginning to form a 4, basically, and it would be Clase, Karinchak, Stephan, and then one of Hinches, Sandlin, or
De Los Santos? Is he up there enough?
Maybe. Or? I mean, you know, I know a lot of you guys are really, really low on Eli Morgan, but I don't know. I mean, he was so effective for so long, and then he just collapsed suddenly. And like, the thing is, like, he's thrown a lot of innings, so I don't know if that was part of it, but
I mean, he hasn't had a run in a while, so it's not like he's definitely bounced back to having that rough time. But I don't know. I just think a good offense is going to catch up to his changeup more than we've seen against other teams.
He has the second highest strikeout to walk ratio in the team, which, you know, I mean, for all that is, but
that goes back to your point. There's like almost no bad choices other than Brian Shaw. Yeah, there's almost nobody who is an absolute terrible. There's a decent chance Eli Morgan will be good. And everybody else is probably going to be good out of the bullpen.
Like, I don't know who that fourth is going to be, but I'm comfortable in saying they have a fourth. And I think the key here is, I don't know if they have a fourth. They have other guys they can go to go a few innings. I mentioned McCarty, obviously. I don't know if I want to count on him in a big series.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you mentioned
Cody Morris.
Cody Morris, or who's the one you want to become a
Connor Pilkington.
Guy?
Oh, that's right. He's going to be in the bullpen, finally.
Pilkington, yeah. There it is. There you go. So we got him.
The emergence of Connor Pilkington is finally going to be
here we go. Yeah, maybe that, you know what, man? Maybe that's your fireman. Because, like,
7 innings in the bullpen, Merritt. How many runs? How many runs do you think he has? Zero. Zero allowed, Merritt. He's flawless. I'm telling you. Big guy, bullpen, 2 pitches, fastball plays up.
That's big right guy, you say? I'm all about huge dudes.
He may get sweaty. I don't know. Maybe not.
He's only 6'4". He's not huge, huge.
And he's big. He's,
I don't know. He's no Hunter Gaddis. He's no Hunter Gaddis. 6'6", 260, big old mess of a man. That's what
also, but that's a good point. I mean, they'll have Pilkington, Morris, Plesac in the bullpen, maybe. I don't know if I'd trust him anywhere ever. No. But it's better than him starting.
Honestly, if he's pitching anywhere, he'd pitching Game 4 of a... Not even then, actually. Why would he ever start?
Oh, he's never going to start in Cleveland again. That's
I just realized, yeah, he has no... Like, if even if it gets to a long series, he has no role.
Absolutely not.
He'd be bad in the bullpen. They're going to start Savali over him. They're only going to go 4 deep, because that's all you ever do in the playoffs. And, yeah, and he's the 7th best relief pitcher.
My bold prediction now, my old one was Gavin Williams will pitch in the majors, and that's not looking true, but... I don't think Zach Plesac pitches another inning for the Guardians. I don't think
I'd be very because
he's not going to start unless he's like mop up duty late in relief if they have the division wrapped up.
Yeah,
but no more starts for sure, and I don't think he pitches another inning for the Guardians.
I mean, is he even going to come back? Because he fractured his hand. Like, is he even going to come back in time for the playoffs?
Andre Knott said he was hoping for next week as the goal. He'll punch something else then. I mean, that was the next topic. Is basically. He might be back next week, but should he? Because last year, the year before, he injured taking his shirt off. And
that was a funny one. Broke his favorite one, I think.
So dumb. Then he punched the ground this year.
Didn't he hurt his hand last year after a big win in Chicago? Was that what happened?
The Chicago thing was COVID. He went
obviously. That was the...
was the shirt thing Chicago, too?
I thought it might have been. It would be funny if all of them were Chicago based.
Just never take him near Chicago.
You just trade him to the White Sox.
That's a good idea. But yeah, I don't know. I'd like Aaron Civale. He struggled, but I'm perfectly fine giving him more shots. He's proven he can adapt and try to figure out what works, I think. And he also hasn't punched the goddamn ground and injured his hand. Like at this point,
he just seems more composed. I don't know. Yeah. It's a seems thing, but
he is. I mean, he's never driven a car and made a video about how mean the media is to him.
I have a good one.
A random example of things that Zach Plesac has done.
Damn, I'm going to miss Zach Plesac. What a weird nutcase.
And he's not even like Karinchak crazy on the mound either.
He's just like stupid crazy. He's just like he's normal athlete crazy. He's like normal athlete dumb, and which just it's so rare that they also have no social media like discipline. And they're just like, yeah, I'm going to post whatever I want. I'm driving around my car about how mean the media is to me because I did something bad. How could they treat me like this? Ridiculous.
Those monsters. I don't think his agency dropped him. All right, I don't know. We don't know for sure like what happened, but towards the end of a season, right after he punched the mound, he suddenly split from his representation and got a new agent. I don't know if that's which side initiated that, but that seems like if you represent a guy who you need to get money for and he keeps getting out by the dumbest reasons, you might want to cut him and just not do that, especially since he's probably not going to get a huge payday. So I could see if the agency cut him there. But I wouldn't be surprised if also the Guardians are just not going to give him another shot because, like you said, they have umpteen million relievers. They have enough starters now to get through the regular season, and you're not going to use him in the postseason.
Here's a funny article headline. Agency just terminated its relationship with star MLB pitcher.
Star? Mm.
Star? Mm. Star?
we're stretching terms here. Starting.
What is a star?
Did they forget the T-I-N-G? Starting pitcher?
I think it meant starting pitcher, yeah. I don't understand any of this. But yeah, I would be unsurprised. Yeah, like you said, there's no role. He doesn't bring anything to the table that someone else can't do better. And in all honesty, he's gotten worse.
There you go.
He's gotten worse every single year. Like, it's actually kind of wild how he's just trended in the wrong direction every year. I mean, I guess he's a little bit better this year than he was last year, but like, he's also the same pitcher this year as he was last year. So
yeah, I mean, that's why I'd want to give Savali a chance over. I think Savali has at least tried. Have we heard anything about like Plesac trying to do things differently or improving? Like Savali, we always hear things he's doing. He's adding pitches. He's tweaking this, tweaking that. Like Plesac just keeps riding the sinking ship down until he's.
So actually, what's funny is he has a lower ERA this year than he had last year, but because the run environment is so much more suppressed this year, he is actually a worse pitcher.
Lower, yeah, is all that.
Poor guy. I'm sure he's nice enough, but he stinks.
He'll find a place somewhere. He's a decent third or fourth starter on a lot of teams, and
oh yeah, he'll be knocking around for quite a little while. Oh, he's older than you think. Like he's already, you know, he's like 27. Like
yeah, he's a late bloomerish.
He'll be knocking around for a few years here. I mean, I'm sure. I wonder if he'll make 10 years. I wonder if he'll make it to his MLB pension.
Oh, for sure. I think, right? How long has he been?
He's only got four now. He needs six more. I mean, figure you get through arbitration. Will he get four more contracts or one more contract or whatever? You know, there's always a shitty team who needs somebody to eat innings.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll bounce around and go to the KBO eventually. It's over there, but yeah, I think he'll find some teams. What is like a mid five? That's a decent start. A lot of teams, I think, like four or five. He'll be on rebuilding teams for a long time.
But. Yeah, exactly. Like he's not.
The Pirates will love him.
Like a moron, he's durable. Great. So you know. Yeah. He's definitely someone who's going to enter the Royals Pirates
pipeline.
Yeah, the trickle down effectively, right? Like the Reds won't take him because they're too forward thinking in their pitching. Diamondbacks, good choice right there.
There you go.
Maybe the Rockies. Oh, they always need people to eat innings. Okay, there's a good one. So you can hop on that train. I said it derisively, but it wasn't so long ago that Cleveland was part of that pathway. I mean, it was, you know, at this point, almost 30 years, but still, more than 30 years now. Still, you have to respect the old losers.
So the last thing of this week, it was going to be a more dire conversation, I think, is our boy Josh Naylor. I think we both loved coming into the season. Just everything about him, the way he plays, him in general, his intensity is, I think, ratcheted up this year, which has been great. But he was struggling recently, especially in September. Nothing really pointed to him, nothing that changed, and like he was so much worse. It just seemed like fatigue because he came back from an injury. He rushed back further than I think quicker than we thought he would. He's back April 15th. He started again. He just kind of got worn down by the end of the season. Basically playing on one good leg, I think, still this time. But he's already has a career high 17 home runs. He hit another one today. He just fucking crushed one, hit a double. I don't know. Is there a concern anymore about Naylor, how bad he's been recently? Or I think he almost needs to be platooned at this point. Is there something they could do next year to get somebody to hit lefties for him?
I mean, I think it's got to be just a ground down into dust sort of a thing, right? Like he does, to your point, like he now has more home runs this year than he had his entire career. But I just, like you said, he come back from what is really a catastrophic leg injury. I still don't think he has to be a platoon. He makes too good of contact, I think.
He's
overall
against lefties, though.
He is, but again, like this is still a growth year for him. It's his second full year as a major league player. And like he bounced around some, obviously, and he got hurt last year. I would say I'm completely okay, quite honestly, with giving him another year of just being a full time going both ways kind of a hitter, because that's the ideal, right? Having guys who can hit both sides. And like the thing that always stood out with him was his contact rate, more than so was his power until this year. And he made a few changes to his swing, it looks like, but like his contact rates are still pretty good. So, I think he'll be okay. I don't think he'll ever be a superstar, but you know, like, I think his peak is something just south of like, Jose Abreu, maybe.
That's not a bad peak, yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, Jose Abreu was, you know, he's never been great. Or maybe like a Paul Konerko type, I suppose. Like, I'm just trying to think of pretty good first basemen, guys who hit well enough where you're not mad about how slow and defenseless they are.
I mean, Jose Abreu did win the Mickey Mouse MVP, so.
I know. Yeah, it was a highway robbery that
Jose Ramirez should have won.
Jose Ramirez should have won that one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so
crumble.
Yeah, I'm not bad.
I'm not owned. Not bad.
But I don't know. Like, am I worried? Yes, because like, but it's also something I expected to happen when I watched him run in June.
Right.
Like, you're just like, he looks terrible out there. Good Lord. You know, it's, It's funny, like, you look at some of his rates now, like, they're trending all in the right direction. His fly ball rate is up from last year, but, like, his hard hit rate this year at this point is now lower than it, just by a smidge, than it was last year. His average exit velocity is down a little bit now. He's still striking out less. He's walking more than he ever has. So he's putting it together. I think it's just he burst onto the scene so hard this year, and then all of a sudden he just kind of tailed off. We're like, oh, he's bad now. It's like, he's still, like, give him a full year off where he can get back into playing shape, because I'm not saying he's, like, out of shape, but, like, he definitely isn't in, you know, you don't want to be ovoid. That's not always the ideal.
Yeah. I guess. I think it's just he doesn't move. Like, he's moved even for a big guy. He's an athlete, but it's clear his leg is, like, he didn't get a full chance to rehab it in an offseason. He was constantly working back to get back. Just let him have a regular scheduled few months off and come back that way, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get his first half, 835 OPS, at 636 in the second half. So it's obvious that, like, and I've dug too deep into this. I'm going to do that this week, actually, just see if he's been attacked differently following the, you know, the what do you call?
All-star break
or whatever, or if it's adjusted to him, or if he's swinging at different things, or what it is. But, again, I think it's just, this is one of the reasons why superstars in Major League Baseball are so impressive, is because they're doing it not just for a week or a month or, you know, 2 months. They're doing it for 6 months, like, without fail and, like, not grinding down. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It sucks that he's not good. I have hope, faith that, you know, it'd be nice if they kind of locked up the what do you call him, gave him a few days off to rest his leg so he could come back and just mash in the postseason. But
it's weird about all these guys who complain about being platooned or sitting out too much, and it's not Josh Naylor sitting out or being platooned. It seems like ever. The guy who probably needs it the most and doesn't get it. But I think we also just forget that, like, how hard he broke out when he first came. Like, last year, the rest of his career, he's just been kind of bad. It's always been potential. And then he was still a superstar, and now he's kind of leveled out into an above-average guy, which I think he could basically end up being, which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, what, April and March, I mean, it was only 12 games, but he was still hitting 311, 815 OPS. It jumped up to 890 in May. Like, he was insane in July, 19 games. He went 333, 365, 609. Like, he was unspeakably good. And to your point, too, it does seem like he plays a lot more than guys like Andreas Giménez. Yes,
that's exactly what I had in mind.
Like, 133 to 110. I mean, he's actually played 23 less games, but, like, it just seems so jarring that when Andreas Giménez is not playing.
And then Ahmed Rosario gets to play every single game, and Andreas Giménez just, for whatever reason, just can't play a doubleheader. Can't do it.
And that blew my mind, man. I was in the lineup yet, or on
Saturday?
On Saturday, I was like, wait a minute, what's wrong here? I was staring at it for a minute.
There's been more than one occasion where I looked at a lineup without Andreas Giménez, like, wait a minute, why is he not here?
But then on Sunday, he was leading off, which I thought was pretty cool. So, you know, I'm like, I don't know what to think anymore. What's going on here?
I just bat him second, get Ahmed Rosario out of there. That's like the biggest problem with Ahmed Rosario getting all the way back there, is he's like the Brian Shaw on offense, is he's used in the weird places. And
why are you always here? Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, Naylor, I saw somebody suggest on Twitter, Carlos Santana, bring him back just to play
lefty. Why?
Cheap deal just to play lefty for the Mets. He's really good. No. He's really good.
No, fuck he's that. Really no, we're moving on from Carlos Santana.
Just one more. I just need one more hit of Carlos Santana. That's all I need, and then I'll be done.
No more bringing the band back together. I'm tired of
one more hit.
We're doing new people. We're putting together a batting order of Juan Giménez, Ramirez, Gonzalez, Naylor, and I don't care who's after that. Whatever.
You know, Santana with the Mariners, he has 13 home runs, and his slash is 181, 286, 407.
I love it. I love it to death.
See? You want him back. His on base is 12.1. That's not very good for Carlos Santana numbers, but probably enough walks. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just saying, the people want it, Merritt. They should give it to him.
The thing about the people is they're dumb, all right?
I am the people. I want Carlos Santana.
The people voted for Brexit. So what do you want, all right? Come on. Not our people, of course.
Yeah, they're the Queen's people. I guess Queen's people. Whatever. Those ones over there.
Yeah, the Queen's dead. Yeah. Finally put her body in the ground. Took long enough. Shloving that corpse across that damn island for a week. What's a stank by the end of there? Jesus Christ.
Was it a drill tweet where he said, like, I waited 5 hours and the queen is dead? I waited 5 hours to meet the queen. It turns out she's dead. That's great. On that note, Merritt, I think that'll do it for us on this week's podcast. If you
Sounds good.
unless you are in Great Britain and love the Queen, please do not leave a review on the podcast. But everybody else, wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Follow us at Cover the Corner, coveringthecorner.com. I'm Matt R.L.Y. on Twitter. Merritt is Matt Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. Merritt, talk to you next week.
God save the King.